All right, welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. JJ here with me, as always, is Dan, and it has been another busy news week. Probably up to the merit of the early off-season Black Wednesday when the Buffalo Bills lost several captains. Well, another one is walking out the door. Stephon Diggs traded to the Houston Texans. The Bills get back a second-round pick. They send a 5 and a 6, one in this year and one in next year. We'll get into all the details here, Dan. And they have to eat $31 million in dead cap in 2024. Then cap relief, it shows up in about $27 million next year that they would have otherwise been on the books for with Stephon Diggs if he had stayed. Where are we at? Where are you at with this, my friend?
I have a lot of complex feelings in this particular moment right now, JJ. And again, glad we are not a reaction pod, though we will be dropping this pod a day earlier than we normally do, like hopefully hitting that sweet spot between when all the immediate reaction is done and then get into more of the processing in a rational way that some of our listeners are looking for. All that being said, though, my thought when it first happened was the Bills, and this is the scary part, the Bills don't think they're good enough to compete in 2024. You tolerate a guy like Stephon Diggs, who will go down in this era as one of my favorite Bills, maybe one of my favorite Bills of all time, for what he did for the turnaround of this franchise, right? But you tolerate a guy that communicates like Diggs for only so long and only in a certain situation. And that situation is usually a winning situation because winning is the best deodorant. The Bills moving on and eating the level of dead cap money that they are eating from this particular deal tells me that they did not believe they would have a sustainable winning roster heading into 2024. And it made Diggs and it made the necessity to take this dead cap medicine now an imperative for them. So that was where my head first went was, oh, Bean isn't throwing up the white flag, but he is signaling to everybody, this is like a roster reset akin to what we experienced in 2018. And that as a result of going through that reset, a guy like Diggs didn't help the process. That was my immediate reaction. And then JJ will dig into more and more of kind of like what I think the cap mechanics behind this mean, what I think the long-term roster build means, and even the clues that I think this tells us about the type of offense that the Bills are going to run moving forward here. Because I think we're not just at a roster transition point. We are at a scheme and philosophical transition point for Buffalo Bills football and what it means specifically for the offense too. So all of that stuff and more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, if there was a book that was written about this offseason, the subtitle would be younger and cheaper, right? Like it younger and cheaper at the expense of almost anything because.
Interesting, JJ. Because right. That is in the mission statement on my resume when I go out competing for jobs.
Younger and cheaper. I'm younger and cheaper. Yeah, so I don't feel younger anymore, but I'm definitely cheap. But oh, God. Regardless of all that.
We're so in our feelings.
Yeah, I know.
This is not
I
a
know.
Reaction pod. Get it together.
No, I know. Ha, ha, ha. Be professional. But the Diggs move to me, it clearly, I mean, everybody's in the immediate aftermath. People were like, what? You got worse. You ate a huge amount of dead cap. You had to give away picks to get a second. You know, kind of all of these things. And I agree. I think I was even going back and forth with Greg Thompson on Twitter or X. And I respect most everything that Greg Thompson does. But he was super hard in his feelings about this being an absolutely dog shit business move and like a really bad and not trusting Brandon Bean anymore and all this. And like the point I was trying to make, and I've been trying to make this with a number of people that I've been engaging with online, is that my immediate response to this was that there is something that we do not know about the mechanism for this trade. We have Joe Mixon coming out talking about Diggs talking to the Houston Texans for weeks about being traded down there. We have Brandon Bean in his press conference refusing to directly answer the question if Stephon Diggs demanded a trade. We have the fact that Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs have cooled off in the past two offseasons. They don't see each other in the offseason. They don't seem to do the things that friends do in the offseason like they did the first two seasons that Diggs was with the Bills. And then on top of it, we have the chirping of Diggs' brother, the fact that he's not outwardly crushing that, the fact that he sends all these coy tweets, and, you know, talks shit a little bit passively about Josh Allen's success being all his, you know, doing. And so it's a matter of the thing I got into was, yes, it seems on the face value a terrible trade. The dead cap is massive. The return on investment is minimal. But the way I see it is if Diggs forced their hand and Brandon Bean was sort of in a ultimatum situation, this was probably, it's sort of a magnificent return if his choice was Diggs sits or you trade him to get anything. You know, because I mean, we think about players like Amari Cooper went for a fifth and a sixth in his prime, younger than Diggs, with better production.
Keenan Allen just went for a fourth, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is they basically bought high for a first round pick. And like, you cannot hold it against the trade that pick became Justin Jefferson, because nobody knew Justin Jefferson would drop to 22 in that draft or raise to 22. His draft stock was not as a top 10 pick. And two, nobody knew that Justin Jefferson would become, you know, the alpha dog wide receiver in the league. So you can't really, you know, you can't look at that thing with hindsight and claim that, oh, well, the Bills should have just picked Justin Jefferson. There was no guarantee of that. There was a guarantee of Stephon Diggs being a rising talent in his mid-20s. The Bills traded a first round pick in the later part of the first round to get 4 years of incredible top three wide receiver production and a veteran in the room to help Josh Allen, a young QB, develop into a captain and leader on the team. And then they traded that asset. Again, they paid a boatload of money. And I think that the extension was poorly timed and they were really kind of eating shit because of it. But then they trade that asset away for a second round pick. So they essentially they just traded a one for a two and then got 4 years of wide receiver production and had to pay a bunch of money. And I think that everybody, you know, Bills fans are like, oh, they paid all this money. What do you care? Like, I don't care how much Pegula pays anybody. Like, I don't actually care. Like, because I mean, I get that using those resources for another player is more valuable than having them dead on the cap. I understand that. But it's not my money. Right? Like, not directly. I'm not a season ticket holder. And I know some of you are, and you might be like, well, they're mismanaging my money. There's a lot more money in the league. You know, the team yields $500 million plus per year. It's not ticket revenue. It's TV money, mostly.
Yeah. Taken in totality, right? Or taken individually, rather. The trade at face value, given everything around it in the context, is about of a good of a return as you will get for a wide receiver entering their age 31 season after one of their worst years of production of their career, right? And we can debate and we can go back and forth about why that production drop-off for Diggs happened. A lot of pods have chosen to focus on that. It's kind of like the reason why they're stowing some of their pessimism because, well, Diggs was on the decline anyway. And that may very well be true. He could also have been injured. It could also have been about Brady's scheme. It could have been any number of things, right? So I think at face value, you look at the trade, the dead cap sucks, right, for this year, because this year it even further limits your ability to put around a competitive team around your young QB, who will not be so young in a couple of years. Josh Allen's going to be, what, 28 heading into the season, right? I think he turns 28 in May. I know. This is blasphemy. I don't know when Josh Allen's birthday is. I should know that more than I know my kid's birthday, right? But yeah, JJ, Google machine that for me. But anyway, Allen is also approaching his age 30 year. By the time this current contract is up, he'll be age 31. So I understand the frustration of a lot of Bills fans who are saying it is now harder for us to field a competitive team with a QB who plays an exceptionally physical style of football, who is still situated in his prime. Now, I don't think 2024 is a throwaway year, but it is hard to see how the Bills are Super Bowl contenders with the roster as it is currently constructed. And now they have hamstrung their ability to put out a more competitive roster, given the dead cap hit that they're facing this year. Get all that anger, right? Yeah. All that being said, though, the trade at face value was probably the best they could have done for Diggs at this current moment. Now, when taken in totality, no one was putting a gun in 2022 to Brandon Bean's head to extend Diggs for the amount of money that he did and agree to these dead cap terms in the way that he did either. This was an unforced error by Bean, and a lot of us had questions about it when it happened, right? Like, it kind of made sense that you want to further your commitment to your productive, somewhat volatile wide receiver one in that way. At the time, him and Allen had a great relationship. So at face value, it seemed to check a lot of boxes other than the future financial implications that that deal would have. He didn't need to do that, right? He didn't need to extend Diggs at that particular moment, but chose to. So my summation of this trade is that Bean did an average job getting out of a situation that was of his own doing, right? He really kind of created this situation, and he did the best that he could with no leverage to get out of it. Yeah. So Bean comes out to me to this okay, but like not a mastermind by any stretch of the imagination. He's undoing, as we see JJ, as he continues to do a lot of his own mistakes, a lot of his unforced errors, right? This is what he does, kicks the can down the road on a lot of these positions. The roster reset we're going through this year should have started in early phases last year at some of these position groups. Bean has not shown the ability to think with that kind of foresight.
No, and I think that criticism is accurate. I think, too, somebody I was communicating with on Facebook summarized it, who's actually a Dolphins fan who lives in Buffalo, New York. But he had a very poignant, you know, he made a good point. It was awfully measured for a Dolphins fan, who a lot of them are stomping on the Bills right now for all this. But it was that, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists. And I think that might have been the position that Bean found him in immediately following an all-pro season for Stephon Diggs, to go ahead and pay kind of a ridiculous amount of money on an extension when the deal still had years left, and reward an exceptionally productive year for Stephon Diggs to try to keep a toxic player healthy. I think that, you know, Stephon Diggs has been largely lauded by guys in the locker room as a good leader, a hard worker. I think that's all true. I think he gets along with the players that he is on the team with pretty well. I think the problem is when anything goes anything comes undone with Stephon Diggs, he immediately goes into toddler tantrum mode. I mean, you've seen him blow up at people on the sidelines. You've seen him take plays off after, you know, if he thinks things are going poorly. And then, of course, you know, he's got his brother chirping on X. He's not squashing that. He's, again, making those passive aggressive tweets and different things like that. I think a lot of it was media overblown, but I think a better communicator and a better team player would have squashed more of it. And I also think that Josh Allen went out of his way to praise Stephon Diggs for his work ethic and his place on the team and what a good teammate he was. I barely ever heard that from Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs would talk about retiring a Buffalo Bill, but he was the last person in the world to praise any other player unprompted.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue, JJ, to really kind of dig into the why behind this trade. I think there are a varied amount of reasons why this particular trade happened when it did. And I think the off-field drama probably plays a role, but I don't think it plays the role that a lot of people think it plays, right? I think there's a lot more at play here. This might have been the final straw. This might have been the instigation or the impetus for the trade, but I don't think it informed the trade itself overall. Because the Bills had, I think we can glean, the Bills had been fielding offers from teams. They weren't necessarily calling teams about it. If the reporting is accurate, the Texans reached out on their own to the Bills, and then this thing happened in about a 24-hour period. So teams were reaching out to the Bills about Diggs' availability, and Bean, as a general manager with multiple roster holes to fill, was doing his due diligence and taking those calls. I think, JJ, this has to do, for me, more and more with the overall roster philosophy that the Bills are taking on moving forward. And I think it's hard to unwed Diggs' drop in production, or let's say drop in priority in the offensive scheming, from when Dorsey was removed and Brady was inserted. There is not a lot that we can take from Brady's time as OC in Carolina, because it was such a short, small sample. But there are a couple of things that have borne out and his limited stint there and his limited stint in Buffalo as commonalities. And one of those things is that he rarely ever schemes for a feature wide receiver. When you go back and look at his one full year as OC in Carolina, DJ Moore, who was considered largely their top threat, along with Curtis Samuels, a solid number two, was like their third most productive wide receiver when it came to total yardage. That was Curtis Samuels' best year, but he never schemed for a 1,000-yard wide receiver. He used these guys very situationally. He used Samuel a lot in the backfield in these funky personnel packages, and DJ Moore was primarily their take-the-top-off deep threat when teams would condense to the short area yardage areas that he was trying to exploit. Enter Joe Brady into Buffalo, and Stephon Diggs, who had been on fire, is the number three overall wide receiver in terms of yardage before Dorsey was removed from the position, sees a drop in production, sees a drop in usage, sees a limited drop in targets, but those targets, as we have noted, were coming in shorter areas of the field. And then JJ, add that to the fact that the deep ball and vertical threat piece of Diggs' game had all but subsided. In 2020, when you take a look at Allen's deep ball efficiency, that was, you could see an ascendance in the connection with him and Diggs in that regard. Allen was completed close to 45% of his passes that year, over 1,100 yards, 12 TDs on deep balls of 20 or more yards. Flash forward all the way to 2023, JJ, that completion percentage drops to 35%, under 1,000 yards at 960, and 8 TDs to 9 INTs. Now, some of that also has to do with the fact that Gabe Davis was a monstrosity of an inconsistent deep threat for this team as well. But it also has to do with the fact that either by choice or as a result of where this team felt like Diggs was and the progression of his career, Diggs was not the deep threat that he was when he first came to Buffalo either. He wasn't winning with a lot of separation downfield, while his short area quickness and ability to separate was still there. Opposing DBs were locking him down the further he went down the field. And we've seen tweets to this regard. L'Jarius Sneed tweeted about this, about Diggs. Diggs complaining he was getting doubled, and Sneed was like, dude, we don't got to double you anymore, right? So I think whether it was by choice or what the Bills were seeing, they knew that they needed a larger deep threat to be a feature of this offense, right? And they didn't have it on the roster. So were you going to settle for more of the same with Diggs, a wide receiver who could also be in decline, right? And then you couple that with Brady's overall philosophy, where he wants to use these guys more situationally, and you could see where Diggs was no longer a fit for what this team wants to do, I think, offensively. To me, that seems like the number one reason, right? Diggs was no longer a fit for what this scheme is going to look like.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think, too, that when you have a player who I don't think Diggs is going to handle his decline in production very well anywhere he goes. I don't know if he's going to be an Antonio Brown, because I don't think that the severe mental health issues are there. But I do think that he is likely to have a rocky decline in the latter part of his career, because he has proven, and this is the thing that I keep coming back to, is people are like, well, why'd the Bills do this? Why this? Why that? Stephon Diggs has been nothing but great. He has a track record of becoming a problem in the locker room for teams when he is unhappy. Like, that is proven. Like, this is now, what, it was Kirk Cousins' fault, now it's Josh Allen's fault? Like, no, the common factor is Stephon Diggs working his way out of favor with teams. And so I feel like in Houston, he may have a big spark of productivity, but I can tell you it's probably going to be from the slot, and it's probably going to be because the primary coverage of every opponent and coming against Houston is going to be trying to shut down Nico Collins and Tank Dell, and probably just leaving Stephon Diggs in one-on-one if they're in man coverage, or leaving his zone without extra defenders angled towards it. He might have a spike in production this coming year, and this is a one-year rental. So the Bills have basically traded him away for a second, and he's only on contract for 1 year with Houston. I think that's a good return. With all that said, I agree. I think that you saw he didn't top 100 yards. He hasn't caught a touchdown in the playoffs since like 2020. I don't see the big loss here. You have to replace 100 catches, right? But I think that Joe Brady's scheme is not about having one one massive receiver take the lion's share of the catches. He's going to try to be distributive. He's going to try to target, you know, the weak spot of the defense. And for that reason, I've even cooled a little bit on the trade up for a top tier, top four receiver in this draft. I'm sort of in this world of, can we get two receivers in the top 100? Can we find a way to get, you know, three receivers with only one in the top 100, but then two more between 100 and 200 and throw the darts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it'll be interesting. The draft is going to tell us a lot about what Brady's offensive philosophy is going to look like, depending on how the Bills handle that first round. I think a lot of Bills fans are clamoring for them to move up in the draft, especially if a guy like Neighbors or Adunze falls. I think Neighbors is more likely to fall than Adunze is. But I don't know that they're, with all the holes they have created on this roster and the clear mentality they have set to get, as Yusuf said, younger and cheaper, I don't know that they give up significant and future draft capital to go get a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. or Adunze or Neighbors. I think they're going to be more content than we think to see who falls to them to 28. And if no one falls to them at 28, I think we could see a second round double dip. If Carolina comes calling with that 33rd overall pick because they see an OT that they want to take at 28, I think the Bills absolutely make that trade, right? And then we have said there's likely to be a run on wide receivers in the second round. There could be 11 or even 12 of these wide receivers that come off the board before the Bills hit 60. If you're sitting there in the catbird seat at 23, you're going to get your pick of that second tier, be it a Xavier Worthy, be it an A.D. Mitchell, a Troy Franklin, a Xavier Legette. You know, we'll wait and see, but April's going to tell us a lot, not just about how the Bills are going to approach this future roster rebuild, but offensively, the type of personnel they're looking for and the clues that it gives us to what Brady's full-fledged scheme is going to look like. And JJ, that brings me to my next point about why I think this trade happened now. It's the schematic overhaul and the philosophical overhaul on offense, but it is also too about the financial overhaul that this team needs to undertake. And this has been an off-season, in Bean's own words, about 2025 cap management. They're not giving up on 2024, though I think we could all agree that it is hard to see a Super Bowl roster in the making right now for 2024. But Bean has been adamant about not kicking future money down the road to 2025, because as Allen's cap number continues to balloon, they want to have the freedom to spend and the freedom to re-sign what they hope are going to be lucrative 2024 and lucrative 2025 draft classes. So they've valued that future financial freedom. And this Diggs trade, for as much as this dead money cap hit sucks right now in 2024, it takes $27 million completely off the books for 2025 and Stephon Diggs money. So this is it. Diggs is only now on this team's roster financially this season. 2025 and beyond, Stephon Diggs money comes completely off the books. Had they designated this as a post-June 1 move, they could have only limited the dead cap hit here to $9 million and given themselves more flexibility this season. But then they kick $22 million down the road to 2025, JJ, and I just don't think that is something that was enticing for Bean. And again, it gives me the clue that they don't think this roster is Super Bowl caliber in 2024, but they are looking to make some future moves in 2025 so they can maximize the tail end of this Josh Allen prime window here. So to me, it was all about 2025 cap management. Take your medicine now, JJ, so that next season, with Josh Allen presumably still in his athletic and player performance prime, you can start to spend some money again next offseason.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. And it's the kind of thing, it's sort of that soft rebuild, because I do believe this is going to be a competitive team. I do believe they have a great opportunity to take the AFC East. I think, you know, maybe that's the cap going into this early season, unless we have an absolutely outstanding draft class, which I think everyone in Bills Mafia is hoping for, right? Like, okay, Stephon Diggs has walked. Do we now have a distributive method of, you know, four players having 50 to 60 catches, five players having 60 to 70 catches, right? Like Josh Allen having an outstanding year of just, you know, a lot of, you know, sharing the wealth, because he's not worried and Joe Brady's not worried about scheming Diggs open while Diggs' athleticism and deep speed is on a sharp decline, because that's what we saw. I mean, anybody can, you know, point to a couple of the long balls that Josh Allen was pushed off his spot and he underthrew a little bit. But the reality was, a lot of those situations, Diggs' coverage was way closer than it had been in years prior. A lot of those balls, even if they might not have been perfectly on the mark, they were underthrown, but Diggs was in tight coverage, or they were overthrown because Diggs didn't have the wheels he had had the years prior. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of happens post-draft. And I think that's the biggest thing. If I can, I'm trying to be very zen about this. I was in my, like, guys Bills chat with a bunch of fellow Bills fans. And really, it was the sky is falling chat of, shrug, it's going to suck, everything sucks, the Bills are going to just be terrible again, we're bad, you know? And then people being like, Brandon Bean's an idiot, why would he do this? He didn't get enough back, they got fleeced. And I just tried to, like, kind of slow everyone's roll to be like, okay, like, even if this is a reset, this is a front office and an organization that has won the AFC East 4 years in a row, that has always been in the mix, that has done things the right way, that has invested in their own young talent when they needed to. And I don't see the departures of Davis or Diggs as a problem. I think it was time to reset a couple of positions on this team, and it might hurt. They might not be as competitive this year, but I think you're absolutely right. Going into next year with upwards of $60 million under the cap and then an additional opportunity to clear up another $30 million, there could be like a pretty major contributor. And we haven't been in that world since, you know, the Von Miller signing where it's like, oh my gosh, that guy is on the Bills team. And so there's an opportunity there, and you always overpay in free agency, but in some ways it's worth it. Right. And so I'm really interested to see what that looks like. And I do think that this move makes it more likely the Bills take more draft picks and try to keep more of those guys on the roster this year. Cause you can also point to this time in the offseason versus last year in the offseason, I think their roster only has 60 or 70 players on it. Last year, I think they were closer to 80. And so they are probably trying to plan for more of those 11 picks. You know, even if they come out of the draft with 9, having all 9 of those players remain on the roster going into the season, if not, you know, the roster plus practice squad.
Yeah, and that's a great segue, JJ, into talking about, like, next steps and how we begin to rebuild this wide receiver room or reconstruct this wide receiver room. And I think free agency and draft are markedly different in what they offer. I think the way to go for the Bills is the draft. I think there's some cheap veterans out there. I've seen some Bills fans float trades, trade 21 for Brandon Ayuk, right? Trade 28 for T. Higgins. Problem with that is you've got to pay those guys almost immediately. And even with the relief in cap that the Bills are going to have at their disposal in 2025, you're not in an ability where you could afford even maybe the draft capital to trade for one of those guys. Because I'll bet you that regardless of how the wide receiver market has been shaking out, I'll bet you it's going to take a one this year and a potentially a future two or a handful of future twos to pry away either one of those guys from their respective franchises. And I just don't think from a draft capital standpoint, it's where the Bills want to be. I don't think they want to defer future benefit for young, cost-controlled talent to bring on someone who can, yes, absolutely help immediately. I think Brandon Ayuk is a star, right? Every time I look at that guy on film, dude is open. He's just open all the time. He gets great separation. And I like T. Higgins a lot too, but you can't afford to pay contract up front or the draft equity it's going to take to get either one of those guys when you're in the roster situation and cap situation that the Bills are in. And then other free agent moves they can make, like Tyler Boyd's out there, OBJ is out there, but I see those guys more, if they're still on the market, as maybe a post-draft, post-June type of signing, right? Especially when the compensatory pick formula goes away. I could see maybe one of those guys coming in to firm out the room, but they are not, to me, needle movers at this particular point. The Bills, JJ, need to do what they haven't done since the 2018 draft, which is they've got to hit a home run. And we've talked about this. The Bills have been great at finding those fifth, sixth, and seventh round floor raisers, right? And I would argue that Taron Johnson and Matt Milano are probably stars that they have found in the latter rounds. But JJ, other than Allen, they have not hit on a premium pick, and they have not found those ceiling raisers in the draft as of yet. It is imperative that they do so this year and next year if they want to keep this window with Josh Allen open in his physical and athletic prime. So to me, JJ, free agency is not even on the table for addressing this need. It's got to be the draft.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up OBJ, Tyler Boyd. I think that those would be players that I think would come in as insurance policies and nothing more, right? Like, it's an insurance policy. It's just to, like, maybe cover a need. So the Buffalo Bills have not drafted a single wide receiver higher than the fourth round in their entire Brandon Bean era. And so I think that this is a real test. It's going to be a real question of whether or not, not the Bean era, but in Sean McDermott's time, he got Zay Jones in the second, who's a wide receiver that has stayed in the league as like a wide receiver three. But that's not really, you know, not speaking about too much. And that was not a great year for wide receivers. So Sean McDermott got one in the second. Gabe Davis was a fourth round pick. Marquez Stevenson was a sixth. Khalil Shakir was a five, and he seems like he might be something special. There's a whole group of Justin Shorter stands out there claiming that he's going to be our wide receiver one with Stephon Diggs leaving. And I just say, like, why didn't he make the field while, you know, when Gabe Davis was making no catches for no yards and Stephon Diggs was getting 4 for 37, why didn't they elevate Justin Shorter if he was doing everything he needed to do in practice? I'm guessing he was just not producing to a level where he could get on the field. So until he does, I don't see it. And so, you know, it'll be very interesting to me if the Bills invest top 100 picks on the position, because it's not happened to this juncture in the Brandon Bean era. And it's something that they absolutely have to get right. I think that, you know, I feel pretty confident about turning out some quality picks, considering they had two full-time starters in Dalton Kincaid and Osiris Torrance last year in the draft. The prior year, James Cook and Terrell Bernard and Khalil Shakir in the second, third, and fifth round all seem like studs, as does Christian Benford, who's at least a starting CB in the league. If he can stay healthy, that's an incredibly high value for that position. And so I definitely think they've hit, you know, the year prior, Greg Rousseau and Spencer Brown, both strong starters, DeMar Hamlin, decent depth player. And really, that's what you want. You want to get about 50% of your picks to be able to contribute. They need to have another excellent draft, especially in that first, second, and those three fourth round picks. They really need to hit on all of them.
Yeah, man. And listen, no, I think we're a little bit revisionist when it comes to Brandon Bean's draft history. We were literally revisionist. Like, we went through this whole exercise where we redrafted what we call the lean bean years, right? From like 2019 to 2021 or something like that. And it was a great exercise to go through. I don't think anyone who looks seriously at Bean's draft history will say he has failed to find late round starting caliber players, right? You bring up Christian Benford, though. He's not Patrick Surtain. Right? Like, he's just not. You bring up DeMar Hamlin. He's not Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know? Like, and that is the gear to me that Bean needs to find. We always talk in terms, JJ, about floor and ceiling when it comes to this roster construction. And if we were talking in carpentry terms or general contracting terms, Brandon Bean is maybe the best floor builder. I don't know what the technical term for a floor builder is, but he is like the best hardwood floor guy in the New York State general area.
I should take this one from you, actually. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You,
so
you know where I'm going?
Yeah. No. I'll take. Let me do the construction analogy.
Okay.
So for this one, I think that he's your best framing guy. He builds a foundation, right? He's an excellent framing guy. He is not the finish specialist. He's not the guy you want to come in and hand carve the flourish on the banisters going up the stairs. The things that make it shiny, bright, sparkly, raise the sale value of the house. Like, he can build you the sturdiest 200-year house that'll stay standing, but it's not going to be the showstopper on the block, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, and that house needs to have a ceiling and a roof. And this is the piece that Bean always seems to forget, right? He's so focused on shining those floors and framing out the foundation of the house that he forgets that it needs a freaking roof too. And hitting the roof on a lot of these draft picks, hitting the ceiling with some actual superstar caliber players is not something that Bean has done, you could argue, since drafting Josh Allen. But that's what other squads have done. The Chiefs have found their Trent McDuffie. The Chiefs have found their Creed Humphrey, right? When you look at the Baltimore Ravens, they've got their Zay Flowers. They've got their Mark Andrews. They have found these superstars, right? And the comparison point to me, JJ, that a lot of people are making between the Chiefs moving on from Tyreek Hill and the Bills moving on from Stephon Diggs is a false equivalent, because the Chiefs got immediate help in the draft that season when they traded Tyreek Hill that they used to turn into Trent McDuffie and future superstars. And the Bills don't have that benefit here. They've got to take the ammo that they have, and they've really got to find some game changers, not just in this year's draft, JJ, but in next year's draft as well. And that is something we have yet, and I think it's fair to say, we have yet to see Bean do, is hit consistent home runs in the draft. He's hit a lot of singles. He's hit a lot of doubles. I'm going to change to baseball analogies because that's my thing, right?
Right.
He's hit a lot of singles. He's hit a lot of doubles. But other than Allen, find me the home run, because I don't think there has been one.
I think the jury's out for the time being, but I think James Cook is probably a home run if we look back at his career in 3 years. And potentially Dalton Kincaid. Those may be home runs.
Maybe.
But it's too early.
Yeah. Right. Way too early to know, yep. Right? So Bean's got to elevate his game in the upcoming draft. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think the lean Bean years, as you mentioned, the 19, 20, and 21 draft, it's, you know, it's like Ed Oliver. End of discussion, right? Like that's such a good one, right?
And he's
not a superstar. No, right. He's absolutely not a superstar. He's not, you know, he's not a Mark Andrews. He is literally what you consider an above average top 15 level starter, but he is not Aaron Donald, right? Like, and he was picked 9th overall. So I think you're absolutely right. It's tough to pick in the later round of drafts, but there are other good teams who have been able to turn those picks into top tier talent. And we've seen good talent, and we've got some young, exciting talent, but I don't know that we have, you know, that elite superstar level. And so this is it, right? Like, we have 11 picks in the draft. Do what you got to do, Bean. Get us some superstar talent.
Right. Find hit a couple of home runs, and then consistently hit those singles and doubles that we know that you do. Like, it wouldn't shock me if out of 11 picks, they end up making 9 drafts, because I really do think they're going to package a couple of fours to get up back into the third round, especially if they find a player there that they like. But let's say they make 9 picks. If they hit on 5 of those and they get one absolute superstar or immediate contributor out of that on the offensive side of the ball, I'm thinking wide receiver, right? Then it's a good draft. But he needs to stack some of these up, and he just hasn't, right? He just hasn't. So JJ, to kind of wrap this thing up here, we have talked ad nauseum, right, about trade targets for the draft targets for the Buffalo Bills coming up here this month at the end of April. We've talked about the A.D. Mitchells. We've talked about the Brian Thomas Jr.'s, Troy Franklin, Xavier Leggett's. We've talked about all of the Jalen Pokes, right? We've gone through all of them. Does the trade to you of Stephon Diggs at all alter the way you think they will approach this year's draft? Will they package future capital to move up into the top 10 or even the top 12 if, say, a Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze falls? Or is it more likely that they stay pat at 28 and move forward with the wide receiver board as it falls to them? What do you think happens?
So as we talk about with these always context matters, I think that only if Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, or Marvin Harrison drops unsuspectingly to the like 8 or beyond level will they even consider any kind of move. I don't believe that Brandon Bean will move up for anybody else other than those 3. I don't see that. I think that maybe a slight move to the like low 20s for Brian Thomas Jr. is possible, But I think you've said, and I've agreed with, the fact that I don't see the Bills having anyone else other than Brian Thomas Jr. in those top three as, you know, graded round one wide receiver can't miss prospects. And so I wonder, you know, and we don't know, like there's always the opportunity that they have Xavier Leggett as number four or number three, you know? And so we'll see. But if that's the case and all of the draft Knicks are right about it, he'll be there at 28 for the Bills and they could just snap him up. So I think that, you know, we see aggressive if the board falls. I don't think we see what would be the equivalent of a pre-draft trade for the Bills to try to get into the top 10 like they did for Josh Allen, right? Like they moved all of the things they needed to get up closer to, they got to 12, right? And then they moved into 10 on draft day, within the top 10 on draft day to 7. So I don't see the Bills making any sort of preemptive move to get halfway up with the anticipation of needing to get into the top 10. I think it's more likely that if something falls, it might be an emergency kind of move. And then if nothing falls, it's likely they stay put, read their board as it comes to them. And I'll say this, I think it's just as likely that they take an edge rusher at 28 if all four of those guys are gone, plus like A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy or something.
We are weeping. We are weeping, yeah, as Bills fans. But yeah, I mean, if they stick to their philosophy of BPA with all of these holes on the roster, that to me is a signal more than anything that 2024 isn't just a reset, it's a rebuild year for them. If they end up standing pat and going edge or going offensive lineman or something like that, that to me says they are building for the future. And the 2024, while they will, you're always going to be competitive when you've got Josh Allen and you've got Sean McDermott calling the defense, which I think now is more likely than ever, given the pressure this team will be facing. You're always going to be competitive when those two things are in the cards. But if they stand pat and they go edge round one, that tells you that 2024 to them is probably a bit of a lost season, right?
Well, a lost season and a season where they are acknowledging the fact that they have a brand new offensive coordinator in his first full year, brand new defensive coordinator in his first full year, both young coaches, and they've just let 1,300 yards and 100 plus receptions walk out the door. So, or they've just sent it away. Like they sent Diggs away. I think that's the biggest thing, is like, you let Diggs go. No, he probably wanted to go and you pushed him that way. Like you sent him away.
They were happy to accommodate.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Happy to accommodate. So, yeah. So, JJ, more to come, right? But anything between now and draft day is just going to be speculation. What we do know now is that the Bills are full-blown in roster reset mode and maybe a shade away from all-out rebuild heading into this season in 2025. JJ, one final thought, because it's never too early to make reckless preseason predictions. Last season, we had the Bills win floor at 9 and win ceiling at 11. We came in right at the ceiling because we both study this team with a passionate obsession that few do. As it currently constructed right now, and assuming they make some moves in the draft, where do you see their win floor being, and where do you see their win ceiling being for 2024?
Yeah, I'm not that down on them again. Josh Allen factor matters so much. QB in this league matters the most, and so I'm in the 7 to 10 win range. Because I think that's likely. You can't also discount the fact that they're getting Matt Milano back. They're presumably having a healthy DaQuan Jones. The defense looks like it's going to Bernard in year two as a starter. I think the defense looks like it could be taking a step forward. I really like the upgrade of Mike Edwards at one of the safety spots. Taylor Rapp is sort of a question mark to me as to whether or not he'll do with more opportunity. But I do see, you know, I think Benford and Douglas at the end of the season were the preferred two starters anyway. And so I see the defense being solid. The offensive line is a slight downgrade in depth, but in terms of starting talent, I think it's probably about the same level. And then, of course, James Cook and Ty Johnson, you know, Shakir. I really like Curtis Samuel as a signing. I don't know that they've gotten markedly or substantially worse on offense. I think they've gotten slightly worse, and I think their defense will be slightly better. So I'm still in the 7 to 10 range.
No,
how about you?
I think that's valid. I am in the 8 to 10 range. So floor to me feels like 8, which would be a losing season, right? Mm-hmm. And then the ceiling to me feels like 10. But I think 10 in the AFC East is muddled as it is right now, with the exception of New England, who knows what the Patriots are doing. We got to ask Brandon, what the hell are you guys doing this offseason with all that cap space? They still got $40 million in cap space. Blows my mind.
Don't they have to? There's a cash limit. They have to pay a certain amount.
They've got to hit a cash floor, absolutely. Yeah. And they'll get there after they sign their rookie class and maybe bring in OBJ or something like that, depending on what their QB situation looks like. But I don't want to get too much into them because, you know, we don't want to spoil the Patriots takes for our good friend Brandon.
Right.
But it feels like 10 with all the gambles the Jets have taken in these short-term, injury-riddled, aging veteran signings. Where the Pats at, where the Dolphins are at with their own mini reset and not knowing if Tua is their long-term guy, 10 could probably still get the AFC East. But to me, that feels like ceiling, especially when you're integrating a lot of unknown young parts. So yes. Yep. So that's our reckless prediction for the month of April. You know, we'll make more reckless predictions as we get closer to the season in August and September.
There's a long way to go.
We have a lot more reckless predictions to make at this point. But hopefully, Bills Mafia, you found this podcast enlightening, somewhat cathartic, and at the very least informative for where we're all at now with our Stefon Diggs feelings heading into this season. So for all of you that are mourning at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, and as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.